Welcome, 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 everybody, to the Her Story Circle podcast. This is Gertrude Mache here in beautiful Wellington, New Zealand. Welcome to the only podcast that is dedicated to bringing you inspirational stories from women from all over the world. Our stories range from business and entrepreneurship, health and wellness, family and relationships, creativity, spirituality, and social justice. All these phenomenal women have one thing in common. We believe that we can change the world one story at a time, one woman at a time, by honoring our stories and our personal experiences, and sharing our successes and failures, and transmuting our trials and tribulations in life into learnings and the stepping stones to our future success. Our vision is to inspire, uplift, empower, collaborate, and impart the knowledge that we have gained through our personal experiences.
So I'm Dr. Debbie Silber.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Her Story TV and the Her Story podcast. This is Gertrude Mache here in beautiful Wellington, New Zealand. I am graced with the presence of yet another fascinating lady coming to me all the way from the US. Welcome, welcome, welcome to our tribe.
Oh, thank you so much. So looking forward to our conversation.
So tell everybody your full name, where you're based, how old you are, and share your story with us today.
Sure. So I'm Dr. Debbie Silber. I'm based in New York and San Diego. I bounce back and forth between the two. And I'm so thrilled to have this opportunity just to serve. My topic is betrayal, how to heal, what it causes, everything it does, and how to make it the best thing that could have happened to you.
Wow. So this sounds like it came from a personal experience. Am I correct?
You know, you don't study something like betrayal because you want to. It's my 30th year in business. You asked how old I was. I'm 55. So I've been in health, mindset, personal development forever. And I had a horrible betrayal from my family. Thought I did everything I needed to do to heal. And a few years later, it was my husband. And I was shocked and devastated and blindsided like anybody else who's been through it. So I got him out of the house and I was like, okay, I have 4 kids, 6 dogs, a thriving business. No, it's about me now. Because I looked at those 2 situations and I said, what's common to those? It was never about me. My boundaries were getting crossed. And I was like, something has to change, and that's me. So I dove into this PhD program. I enrolled at 50 in transpersonal psychology, the psychology of transformation and human potential. And because I was changing so much, I didn't quite understand it. He was too on his own, wasn't ready to look at that. And then while I was there, I did a study. I studied betrayal. What holds us back? What helps us heal? And what happens to us physically, mentally, and emotionally when the people closest to us lie, cheat, and deceive? That study led to 3 groundbreaking discoveries, which changed my business, my family, my health, my life.
Wow. Wow. And it sounds to me like just based on this experience, you've kind of created some kind of a methodology, a process that can actually help somebody in a situation like this, correct?
Oh, absolutely. One of the discoveries was while we can stay stuck for years, decades, a lifetime, and so many of us do, if we're going to fully heal, we'll move through what we now know as 5 proven predictable stages. And what's even more exciting about that, we know now what happens physically, mentally, and emotionally at every one of those stages. And we know what it takes to move from one stage to the next. Why is that good? Because now healing from betrayal has a roadmap.
Wow. Wow. Now, where is the point where most people get stuck? You know, when I went through my divorce after 27 years of marriage, I was lost. I didn't know who I was anymore.
Yeah.
And I remember telling myself, I don't want to get stuck. I want to move on with my life. I'm going to find my next husband quick, fast, and easy because I love being married. I loved having family around me.
And a lot of people were surprised at how fast I recovered, but I managed to do that because I have a lot of friends who are still in situations like that where they just haven't been able to move on. So mm-hmm. what are your findings?
Yeah, well, it takes, what I've found is one of the biggest needle movers that move us through the stages really isn't about how severe the crisis was. It had to do with resistance. So much of it had to do with resistance and willingness to move forward. For example, if you're numbing, avoiding, distracting because it's painful to feel and face, you'll stay stuck, right? As opposed to someone who says, I'm just going to put my head down and not lift my head up until I am through this. But the most common out of all the five stages, and I talk about it in Trust Again, but the most common is to get stuck in stage three. Because in stage two, that's the shock. That's the trauma. That's D-Day, Discovery Day. But once you've figured out how to survive, because it feels so much better than the shock and trauma of where you just came from, you think it's good. So we start planting roots here and a few things happen. We get our story. We get all those small self benefits. Like we get to be right. We get someone to blame. We get a target for our anger. We don't have to do the hard work of learning to trust again. Should I trust you? Should I trust you? Forget it. I'm not trusting anybody. We get sympathy from everybody we tell our story to. Mm-hmm. So we plant roots there. And then what we're there. And then this starts happening. Our mindset starts changing and we're like, maybe I'm not all that great. Maybe it's me, right? And now we plant deeper roots. And now, because like energy attracts like energy, we're calling situations and circumstances and people towards us that confirm that's where we belong. It gets worse, but I'll get you out of there. Because you don't like it here, but you have no idea there's a stage four and stage five waiting for you, you think this is it. Here, right here, is when you start using food, drugs, alcohol, work, TV, keeping busy, reckless behavior. So you do that because it's terrible, but you don't know it gets better. So you do that for a day, a week, a month. Now it's a habit, a year, 10, 20 years. And I can see someone 20 years out and say, that emotional eating or that drinking or that, that numbing in front of the TV, do you think that has anything to do with your betrayal? They say, oh my gosh, that happened 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But do you see? They were just stuck in a perpetual holding pattern that whole time.
Wow. That is just incredible. And a lot of people are doing this totally unconsciously. They're not even aware of where they're at in life at that moment in time. So you've created this process. You're helping people get unstuck. I really love this. If you were to go back to the younger you, that woman who experienced betrayal, is stuck, is hurt, doesn't see where they're going, can't see the wood from the trees. What three nuggets of wisdom would you have said to her at that point in time?
Yeah. There wasn't a roadmap before it was discovered. So that version of me was just so determined to heal. And I said, if I can heal from this, I'm taking everybody with me. So I would just reassure that version of me or anybody going through it. You're not crazy. You're not alone. You can heal from all of it. That's the most important thing. I would also tell that version of me and anybody else who's going through it, even if you have to say this to yourself 100 million times, it's worth it. Even though it was done to you, it's not about you.
Mm.
It's really not. And I would also say, you have every right just to rebuild yourself and move on. Rebuilding is always a choice, whether we rebuild ourselves and move on. That's what I do with my family. Or if the situation lends itself, if you're willing, if you want to, you can rebuild an entirely new relationship with the person who hurt you. That's what I do with my husband. Not long ago, we married each other again.
Oh, wow. Now that is a nice story.
New rings, new vows, new dress, and our four kids is our bridal party.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And that's a very unusual thing because most people will have just taken each other to bits mm-hmm. by the time they've gone through a challenging situation like that. I remember when I left my husband, I said to him, you know what? It's time for us to part company before I start hating you.
Yeah.
And I felt that we were connected at the hip for the rest of our lives through our three beautiful children. And I wanted to be able to go to my daughter's wedding and stand next to my ex-husband and still be friends.
Yeah.
And we succeeded in doing that in a very magical way. We're still good friends. I remarried. He's not married. But it's interesting that you've managed to do the same thing. And a lot of people fail to do that.
Well, it's so important because I guess in all of the studying that I did, in all the studies and all the research and all the everything, it's such a different type of closure when you heal and move on, like I did with my family. But that healing and rebuilding, you know, when it comes to forgiveness and reconciliation and my ego, I mean, that was a big one to get through too. It's a different type of dynamic, and I never would have done it if I wasn't completely different, or for sure if he wasn't completely different. But there's that death of the old, yes. Death of the old me, death of the old him, death of the old relationship in order to rebirth that new. And I think a lot of people are afraid of that because of the unknown. I was ready to be a single mom. That was the deal breaker. And wow. It's in that complete and utter destruction of the old, that's where the new has a chance to birth.
Wonderful. So now let me teleport you into the future. If time was an illusion and your past, your present, your future existed in the same timeline and you could go between the three different times, mm-hmm. If you were to have a conversation with the future you at the age of 100 and you're sitting in your rocking chair and your grandchildren, great-grandchildren are in front of you, and you could have a conversation with that woman based on how you've lived your life and how you're playing the life game right now, what would you say to her?
You know what? I would thank her for getting her ego out of the way, for being willing to be vulnerable, for being willing to share her story so she can impact millions of people. That was one of the hardest things for me to do. I'm a private person, and this is what gossip thrives on, but it's helping so many people, and it's so worth it. And I would just appreciate the road she took.
I love that. Wow. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for gracing us with your presence today, sharing your nuggets of wisdom. I love the fact that you are really helping other women navigate these difficult emotional experiences that we have in life. And thank you to everybody who's tuned in. Like you can see, we have a breadth of stories. Every single woman who stepped forward to share has got a piece to the puzzles of all of our lives. So thank you for tuning in today. Debbie, thank you again for this interview. And have a fantastic day, everybody, wherever you are in the world. This is Gertrude Mache with the Her Stories podcast and the Her Story TV. See you tomorrow. Bye for now.
If you would like to support the Her Story Circle so that we can curate more fascinating and intriguing stories around business and entrepreneurship, health and wellness, family and relationships, creativity, social justice, and spirituality, hit the donate button on the herstorycircle.com website, and this will help us reach more women and share these fascinating stories with you every single day. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for listening in.
My name is Phyllis Urshowski, and I am calling in from Florence, Vermont.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Her Story TV and the Her Story podcast. This is Gertrude Mache here in beautiful Wellington, New Zealand, and I'm graced with the presence of yet another fascinating creative woman coming to us all the way from the United States. Welcome, welcome, welcome to our platform, and welcome to the tribe. Please tell everybody your full name, where you're based, how old you are. Share your story with us today.
I will. First of all, I am so thrilled to be here. I have not had much opportunity to be in an international forum, so this is very exciting for me and very new. My name is Phyllis Urshowski, and I am calling in from Florence, Vermont, where we have lived for just 1 year. We moved here from Florida and we're originally from New York. So it's the third place that I've lived in my life. And we've had a very exciting year of learning how to live on a little farm and doing some new things and basically changing a lot of the way we live. So I'm here today to share things about my career, but also one of the new things in my life is that I recently became a children's author and I published my first book and it just came out at the end of last summer. And due to the pandemic, most of the talking that I've done about the book has been online. But the story that I want to share with you today is really kind of how the book came about. I'll show you what it looks like. It's Emily and Lucy to the Rescue. Great. And this story came about in kind of an interesting way. For all of my life, I've been health conscious, you know, trying to eat healthily. I've run marathons. I've been inspired by my family and my children. We've run together. We do camping. We've done a lot of outdoor activity. And I've always enjoyed kind of a good, healthy outdoor lifestyle. And about 2 years ago, I unexpectedly was diagnosed with a serious illness. And it just kind of came out of the blue. I went for some routine testing and was immediately transferred to an emergency room. And for the next several days was undergoing medical diagnosis to figure out what this was and where it was coming from. So during this period, my family, who's so supportive and who I just love so much, they kind of rallied around me and gave me their support. And my daughter was immediately, you know, putting her life on hold and came to be with me and went to meet with me to all the appointments and to my first treatments when they did, you know, find out my diagnosis. And it was just so, it just filled my heart and was really just touching to me. And I was having many dreams, very vivid dreams during this time. And one of them was I was dreaming about Emily as a child, even though she is now an adult. And her dog, Lucy, who she didn't have until she was an adult, but in my dreams, she was a child with Lucy. And through love and compassion and kindness and just being so connected to me in the story and in my dream, she is able to help get through a very, very challenging time. So it occurred to me when I woke up that there must be many children all over the world who have, you know, illness in their family, sickness, you know, sick loved ones or other challenges that they're facing. And they feel scared and a little bit lost and kind of helpless. So I wanted to reassure children that they can be the hero of their own story and be empowered to help through just like simple things. You can encourage, you know, taking a walk outside or going for a swim or reading a book together or, you know, watching your favorite movie or eating ice cream, whatever it might be, just that being together and everything really could help the way that Emily and Lucy helped me through that time. So it kind of came together in that way. And I contacted a publisher that I knew through my public relations work, and they were excited about the book. They felt that there wasn't anything really like it. And so I started putting it down on paper and I was connected through the publishing company to this wonderful illustrator. She's from Italy. Her name is Chiara Savarese and she's very, very talented and she really got it. She understood the story when I sent it to her and just all of a sudden Emily and Lucy to the Rescue came to life and really just delighted me and hopefully it will help others. So that's the story of the book. And that's how Emily and Lucy to the Rescue came to be. I cannot leave out the fact that I have another child. His name is Michael. And he also, as soon as Emily had returned home, he surprised me at my door one day and also, you know, was there in great support. So there will be a sequel and at least two and maybe, you know, maybe even three books so that the series is dedicated to helping children going through difficult times.
What a fascinating story. You know, it's amazing what happens when we go through major life challenges, especially health-wise. I'm recovering from heart failure. So I went through a separation, divorce, ended up on my back in a rice field in Indonesia, in Bali. But it was a slap in the face to wake up to life again. I wasn't in a very good place psychologically, but just that little brush with death really brought me back. And I think I'm the fullest expression of myself like I have never been before.
So something good came out of it.
Something good came out of it, yes. Now, you know, you've just touched on how this book is going to help a lot of children cope with illness at this moment in time. The pandemic that we're all experiencing globally is brushing on all of us. I don't think there's anybody who's going to come out of this experience unscathed in some way. If there was a little child right now whose mom is ill or dad is ill, what would you say to them? What three little nuggets of wisdom would you tell that child in this very moment?
I would want the child to know that it's okay to feel sad. It's okay to be scared and not to know what happens next, but to know that you are loved and that you can love, and you know that that will help see you through and face the challenge.
So. And yeah, we are going through an interesting time. Let's just put it that way. And I really love the fact that you're incorporating your children in this series of books.
Yes.
This is now a series of books.
They are the inspiration.
They're the inspiration for the book. So tell us a little bit about your kids.
They are, they're my heart. Probably, you know, the best thing I've ever done in you know, my life. And it is so nice to see that these, you know, lovely little children grew up to be kind and helpful and responsible adults. So I've enjoyed every stage. You know, I know, I think with working full time as a mother, you treasure the time that you do have with your children when you're with them. So I really appreciated the whole evolution of them, you know, coming from child, you know, to adulthood. So, my son is a lawyer. And he has his own practice, and he has a lovely, wonderful family. And so I get the joy of also being a grandmother now.
Oh, congratulations.
And, thank you. So that's a lovely development. And then my amazing daughter, Emily, she lives in Denver, and she is a brand marketing specialist. She does a lot of things with event planning and really very organizational. She's very take charge. She has, you know, she's... and she is a great companion for me. We love to travel together and run together. And she's just, you know, and both my children are just an amazing part of my life.
Oh, how awesome. That's just fantastic. Now, as a mother, a working mother, that work-life balance, if there's another young woman who's listening to us right now, how did you do it? How did you juggle it? We're constantly juggling so many balls.
I know.
How did you find that balance? You know, what I used to do with my kids is I used to have appointments with them. They had a day in the week that was dedicated to each of them. I had to kind of separate it out so they really felt like I was present and there. Even if it was just an hour, I would do something individual with each of my kids. How did you do it?
So, you know, I've watched this happen, and it isn't that much better now than it was, you know, back then. You still have that challenge of having to juggle it. I don't think it has gotten so much easier. So I've gone through, I think, every type of childcare arrangement you can have. At first, we had somebody living in our house for a while, and I was able to, you know, go to work full time. Then we had people that would, you know, come in the day for a few hours. I had my children go to preschool programs and after school programs. And I am lucky to have a partner and a husband who also, you know, was helping me in, you know, the picking up and the dropping off and the going to games and concerts and those kind of things. So we did make weekends our time. We almost always have dinner together. So we made, nice. You know, together in this time. But summer vacation would roll around, and again, it would be a challenge of, you know, going to camp, running here and there. It was never easy. It always seemed to be piecing it together. And yeah. I think until you have like more programs, like maybe, you know, in corporations where they have, you know, daycare in-house or some better childcare arrangements, I think there's a lot of room for improvement.
Right. So, now, you know that the Her Story platform is all about women's empowerment. We uplift each other. We share ideas. I know that part of where you're going with your career right now, based on our little conversation before we started the interview, is that you now want to be able to impart your knowledge, your skills to other women. Let's talk a little bit about that and the importance of us doing that.
So I think it's so important. And I spent so many years, you know, trying to grow my business, work in my business, be the best that I could and have continuous improvement in what I do. And then a few years ago, I had the opportunity to be an adjunct professor in their public relations and communications department. And when I was working with the students, I just found that incredibly fulfilling. They were so interested. I was surprised at their interest in my work. Not so much what was in the textbook, but, you know, tell us about that event that you planned for the client. And what was that news story that you worked on? And how did you write that and make that connection and all of that? And they just really wanted to hear about the work that I had done and what had happened in my career and the relationships that I had. And I just really liked sharing that with them. So since that time, I've also in my work been able to work with other college students as interns. And I am very hopeful for the next generation. I mean, they are just inquisitive and enthusiastic and they want to know more. Yeah. And I've had all these experiences from, you know, corporate to an independent business of my own to the teaching experience. And I want to pass that along. I feel like I've built up this body of knowledge. And then what do you do with it? You know, you can pass it on and try to help somebody else grow.
So you're going to be starting a mentoring coaching program.
So yes, I'm going to continue to work with interns, and I'm going to encourage, even after they graduate, to use me as a source and a resource. And I have young, you know, nieces and nephews who are college age. And, you know, I feel like they've also, you know, asked me for help with, you know, their resumes and things like that, just because I have the experience and I'm available to them. And I want to make myself available to that.
That is awesome. So let's end our interview with two questions. If time was an illusion and your past, your present, your future existed in the same timeline and we could teleport you back to the younger you, that young woman who is going into her career, based on what life has taught you, what three nuggets of wisdom would you give that young woman who's got kids and is trying to create a career?
What a great question. So the first thing I would say is, don't let being nervous hold you back. You know, it's sometimes we get so caught up in what's going to happen and not knowing what to expect that we are almost paralyzed and not able to move forward. And I can think of times, you know, as going into my career is like, you know, getting a little bit of a false start or, you know, something happening or making a mistake, which totally can really freak you out, you know? So I think trying to get over, that if you could, I don't know if that comes with experience, but you know, if I could go back and tell myself at a younger age to just kind of deal with it and calm down. Second, to be open, new opportunities are out there everywhere. You never know where the road might take you. Just to kind of entertain and think about, you know, what could have been, you know, what you could do. There might be things beyond, you know, what you expect. And let me think what the third one could be. As a mother and as a parent, just really try to enjoy every minute. It's so cliche to say that it comes so fast and you're going to miss it, but it's the reason it's a cliche.
True.
It's true. Right?
I feel like I blinked and my kids grew up. I'm like, where are my babies? Who are these people?
I know. And they were so cute. And I tried to enjoy them and not think that, you know, getting up at night was so horrible and all of that. And I just wanted to treasure every moment. But I don't know. You know, I think when you're in it, that's not easy to do. So I would go back and tell myself, like, just, you know, just really enjoy it. Just embrace it.
I love it. So. Thank you so much for this interview. It has been absolutely amazing meeting you. Good luck with the book. I know that there are a lot of people who are looking for this kind of content right now. And I'm hoping that through our platform, we can spread your voice and your story across the world as well. And thank you to everybody who's tuned in today. I told you we are meeting some of the most phenomenal women on the planet. I am just so juiced up and excited with what's coming. Tune in again tomorrow. I'll be speaking to yet another amazing woman from a different part of the world. This is Gertrude Mache on the Her Story TV and the Her Story podcast. Have a fantastic day wherever you are in the world. Bye for now. And thank you again, Phyllis.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Her Story Circle is a social impact project focused primarily on women and children around the globe. We raise money by curating all of these amazing stories into a series of books, an anthology series where we publish 10 stories in every volume. So you can support us by buying the books. You can support us by donating towards this podcast. You can support us by sponsoring some of the social impact projects that we have highlighted on our website. The link to all our projects is theherstorycircle.com/projects. Our projects range from business initiatives where we set up women's cooperatives and help women get out of poverty. We help people who are helping in their communities. It could be that woman who started a soup kitchen and is helping feed the homeless because of the COVID pandemic. We support women who are focused around the elderly, the homeless, and the disabled. So feel free to go onto the herstorycircle.com website, go into our project section, and see what could inspire you to be part of our circle. Thank you so much. Looking forward to connecting with you. A special thanks goes to our main sponsor, SkinnyTees.com, based in Detroit, Michigan. Linda Schlesinger-Wagner is an amazing woman who shared a story of how she created this amazing business at the age of 63. When she heard the vision behind the Her Story Circle, she became our main sponsor, and I would love you to go onto her website, check out her amazing t-shirts that suit every woman, every age, every size. The website is skinnytees.com. Please support this amazing sponsor who is helping us bring these fascinating stories to you every single day. Thank you, Linda.
My name is Joe Weber. I'm based in sunny Los Angeles, California.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Her Story TV and the Her Story podcast series. This is Gertrude Mache here in beautiful Wellington, New Zealand. And today I am graced with the presence of yet another fascinating lady coming to us all the way from the US. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Please tell everybody your full name, where you're based, how old you are, and share your story with us today.
Sure thing. Well, thank you, Gertrude. My name is Joe Weber. I'm based in sunny Los Angeles, California, in the United States. So a little bit later in the day, but the day before for me right now with the time zone. But thank you. You know, thanks for having me on. I think, originally, you asked where I'm from. Originally, I'm from England, from the United Kingdom. I still have the accent. And I think, what I'd like to talk to you guys about today a bit is I run a company. I actually run two companies, right? Jack Dorsey can do it, so can a woman, right? I run two companies right now. I run one company that's called STEM Connector, and I run another company that's called Pod. And Pod is a networking technology. And I think we actually have 26,000 users in New Zealand. So it's been around for a while. But let's talk about STEM Connector. And
first, yes.
In particular, a part of STEM Connector called Million Women Mentors. And we set this up in 2014. And the goal was to try and get a million women, right? Because that was the name, a million women mentoring other women. And the reason for this is particularly in STEM, we can see that women, when they go into STEM, they tend to leave. And we can see that the women that stay in STEM careers often have a mentor. So that seems to be an important part of it. So what we do is we work with corporations, some of our biggest customers, clients like PepsiCo, 3M, very large US corporations that are very dedicated to this approach and mentoring women. And also, you know, I think one of the things that we really focus on, earlier this year, we put out a report, which was the state of diversity, equity, and inclusion in STEM. And we update that continuously. We're very focused in on, you know, when you look at these corporations, they need a stream of STEM talent, and they also need diverse STEM talent coming into their corporations for them to thrive. So we are the connecting group that kind of makes that happen. I don't know how many of you guys know this, but the this pandemic has disproportionately affected women. Mm-hmm. And in the United States, we've lost 5 million women from the workforce, and we are now at a 36-year low in terms of women in employment. So,
that high.
It's crazy. And when you look at things like, you look at the Fortune 500, which is a big indicator in the US, right? 7% of the CEOs are women. 7%, right? Thanks, guys. Thanks for letting us get there. 7%. Well, with this pandemic, we just wiped out a large rung below those, because the senior ranks of many of these companies were starting to get larger numbers of women on there. So you're starting to see more like 25%, 30% of women at the senior executive level who would then become potentially the next CEO. Well, the trouble with COVID is so many women ended up, and I know one, a professional woman who I thought was fantastic running a business. And all of a sudden she found herself with two adult children at home, badly affected by the pandemic. And she's just like, I can't run this business and take care of my family. And it's mostly the women that end up taking care of the families.
Yes.
So one of the things we are looking at the moment is we're looking at a new movement called A Million Women Workers.
Okay.
What we are looking to do is, I don't know how many people know this, but about 50% of people who have STEM careers, you don't actually have to have a four-year degree. So we are looking at, you've got Microsoft, you've got Google, you've got a number of different companies offering these certification programs where you can spend 6 months intensive, come out with a really useful certification that the jobs, that the corporations are looking for.
Right.
So we're looking at projects where we can reskill, help reskill and retrain, give women the skills that they need to get back into the workforce, because a lot of the jobs they had have just gone away.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Gertrude, I don't know if you know things like cybersecurity, right? During the pandemic, the number of cybersecurity attacks went up sevenfold. So it's 700% increase during the pandemic.
Right.
Cyber thieves are taking advantage. It's a global problem. It's a problem of national security in every country.
Everywhere.
There's zero unemployment, right, in cybersecurity. We can't get enough people in cybersecurity to meet the need. And yet
that's really interesting, because my husband is in IT, and he's just been approached by an agency saying, hey, have you thought of, you know, diversifying and specializing in cybersecurity? So it is a real thing.
It's huge. And one of the things is, you come out of school with a four-year degree, and what do you know about cybersecurity? Nothing.
Wow.
You know, one of the things, we're doing a few projects. Last year, we did a project with Walmart in the US, and it was focused on introducing cybersecurity. And with working with Walmart, we introduced a program for elementary kids, which, you know, you think, you probably don't do
K-12, right?
Oh, you do K through eight, right?
Yes. So
looking at that age. And we think, how can like a six-year-old handle cybersecurity? Well, it was really cute and well done. I thought it was, you know, okay, go find grandma and find one of the programs where grandma's logging in. Maybe it's her email or something, and find out what her password is, and then help grandma pick a password that is really easy for grandma to remember, but really difficult for anyone to guess. So I thought that was lovely, right? Because it's just an early kind of introduction to get kids thinking about this. And then it also staged and went, you know, for all the way through high school, so different levels could kind of understand it.
That is absolutely fascinating. So now this program that you're offering, and I'm so excited that I got to meet you. You know, we had our little conversation a bit earlier, and I told you what my vision and my passion is in the world. I have so many women, so many intelligent women who are looking for opportunities like this. When I lectured at the University of New Mexico, I got involved with a nonprofit called Cultivating Coders. And we were on the reservations of New Mexico because the only employment you can find there is in the casinos. And there's fiber optics throughout the desert.
Yep.
And our project was sponsored by Microsoft. They gave us the laptops that we would gift to the women if they did the boot camp and they completed. And they learned how to make apps. They learned how to make websites. They learned how to make an income sitting on the reservation because they had the infrastructure to allow them to do that. Now, in parts of Africa, it's the same thing. And that's the vision that I have. And I'm just so excited when you responded to this query and to do this interview at the possibility of perhaps bringing this to Africa, because I really think Africa is the next frontier. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are not focused on it when it comes to technology. And yet we have brilliant, articulate women who would work their butts off just to get an education, get a qualification so that she's able to feed her children. How can we get involved? Talk to me.
So, I mean, there's a number of different things we're doing. One of the things that we're doing that is just starting this year. We're creating, we have employers, right? These corporations that are on, that work with STEM Connector. They're all over the world. And I think particularly after COVID, I think everybody's learned that you don't actually have to physically be in an office to be productive.
To do the work, yes.
So one of the things we're doing with them is, you know, if you go to like LinkedIn or Indeed and some of these other areas to try and find jobs, if you're just coming out of university or coming out of school, you don't have those qualifications. You don't have the experience. But yet these companies are looking for people like you. So how do we match it up? So what we're doing is we are creating an environment where all of our members can post any jobs or internships. Internships is a great way to get in. A lot of people don't know this. You can be an intern at NASA at age 16.
Are you serious?
And then that often leads to a career through NASA, right? How fabulous is that kind of thing?
Oh
so
my gosh.
We're going to make, I think so much of this is networks, right? White men have the best networks.
Yeah.
And 70% of jobs, you never even see them advertised.
They don't get advertised. It's all passed on through word of mouth.
Exactly. So if we can make it more in the open, if we can put these jobs out there, and because it's on the internet, anyone in the world can see and apply to some of these jobs. Now, some of them will be, you know, geofenced. They'll be in a certain area, but not all of them will. And most of the corporations that we work with are global. So they've got offices forever, so all over the world. So I do think that's going to be something that levels the playing field.
Yes.
And then, you know, Gertrude, you were talking a bit earlier about, before we got on the camera, about some of the things you're doing. And I feel 2020, although it was an awful year in many ways.
It's the best year ever.
Sitting in America, I saw things change. Things that would have taken 50 years
to happen.
It happened.
The women who are able to work from home and look after their kids, you can work around. So it's the same thing with me, right? Everybody kept saying, oh, this is a disaster. I was watching something online. I can't remember what it was, but somebody was presenting and saying that the Chinese write the word for crisis with two symbols. One stands for opportunity, one stands for danger.
Yeah, I've been using that.
Great minds think alike.
Because there was a lot of opportunity that came out of it. I mean, some of it is these vaccines, the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines. We went forward years in terms of vaccine manufacture with the way those two vaccines are made. And right. I think it's going to be great for so many other things, including cancer, Alzheimer's, other immune system disorders.
I just
think this wouldn't have happened. You know, we'd never made a vaccine in America in under 4 years. 4 years was our gold standard until this hit.
And but then people started sharing.
People, the scientific community across the world. It was fabulous to see. So I totally agree with that Chinese proverb.
Yes.
The opportunity was there. And I also think, you know, in America, a lot of social ills that have plagued us as a society for many years came to the foreground last year.
It did.
And the lid is not going back on that box.
No. You know, it's funny. I had a conversation with another lady the other day who was saying to me, oh, it's so sad what's happening. And I said, no, what's actually happened to the United States is this. The race relations issue in the United States had not been fully addressed. Everybody thought that through the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s, it was taken care of. And to me, watching it from an outsider and having lived in the U.S. a couple of times, it was like somebody had slapped a Band-Aid on a septic sore.
Yeah.
And the pus in that wound was festering for years. And the presidency that was in place helped to pull the Band-Aid
off. Bring it out, didn't it? Yeah.
And now the community, the society has to address the septic sore.
Yeah.
You know, I talk about an African philosophy called Ubuntu, and Linux is based on this philosophy. Ubuntu Ngamuntu Ngavantu says a person is only a person through other people. That as human beings, we are an organism. We are so interconnected. There is no difference between us. What we see as our facial differences is only skin deep.
Yeah.
And when they finished sequencing the human genome, they found that every single human being on this planet is 99.9% the same. So COVID has come to teach us that we are literally a breath away from affecting and infecting each other. That if mm-hmm. one person in the world is not okay, we're all not okay.
Yeah. No.
And I am so excited, Joe, with what is coming.
Yes.
I
can see the change here. You know, I can see, I mean, I think it's really drastic in America.
Yeah.
You know, I've been working a number of years and I've been working in large corporations and people would feel, and I've mostly worked with men because I'm a scientist, I'm a PhD,
yes.
right? So I've mostly been with guys and people would feel it was fine to be openly sexist and racist. And for years that happened, this old boys club, and
yes.
I feel that somebody's
it's over.
Close the door. The party's over, boys. You're going to have to get with the picture here.
There's no going back. And that's why I was saying to you, the number of opportunities I'm getting to present sitting on my couch at home. You know, yesterday I had a company based in the U.S. called McCormick's. I think they make spices.
Yeah.
And they're having this diversity and inclusion thing in Poland. It was the McCormick's Poland that got hold of me. And I'm thinking, how did that happen? I'm sitting
That's
on my cool. couch in New Zealand.
It's really cool.
The world is flat now because of the technology, because of the internet.
Also, I think in America, we really respect your prime minister.
Yes. She's amazing. She's amazing. The reaction and the response that New Zealand took is an example of what should have happened everywhere else in the world.
Absolutely. You know, it was, and we saw that, you know, so she's got a lot of respect. I think New Zealand's hitting above its weight class right now, right? You guys.
I feel blessed I'm here. I'll be honest with you. This is my second pandemic and never in my lifetime did I think I would be so fortunate.
Let me ask you this question.
If I could take you back to the younger you that young woman who was working in a very, very challenging environment as a scientist and is now able to reflect back on what you've done with your career. If you could have a conversation with that younger woman and give her three nuggets of wisdom, what would you tell her about life?
You know, the big thing is the things that are possible now for a woman were not possible when I was young. The road I took, I probably would, if I was to do it again, to do things now, I'd do things a bit differently, but that's because the world is different. So I think, you know, when I was younger, and I think most people are like this, and you go to university, you don't really know what you want to do. But I found my passion in work. So any of my work that I've done, I've thrown myself into it wholeheartedly. And I still kind of feel that that's the right thing to do. You know, maybe I look back and think, oh, wait, I shouldn't have stayed so long in that company, or I shouldn't have. But it's small stuff. I think at the end of the day, you know, the passion to work and the ability to find pleasure in your work is tremendous, because so much of our lives are work.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, looking back, you know, saying to somebody, I mean, I was just such a knucklehead when I was like 18, 19 at university, doing, jumping off bridges, swimming, doing stupid stuff, really stupid stuff. Like my kids, I'm like, oh, you don't do that, right? Nobody would do anything like that. Riding motorbikes, I mean, all this stuff, right? So I think now, you know, looking back, I would have I'm probably a little bit lucky to be alive with some of the scrapes, but you know, maybe don't do some of that stuff. But, you know, living life to its fullest. I also think, and I think I've always embraced this, people. You mentioned that comment earlier about humanity as an organism. You know, one of the things COVID did is it brought all of humanity together.
Yes, it has united us in a very, very strange way. Mm-hmm. You know, Joe, when I came to New Zealand, I would tell stories of the AIDS pandemic. And I would share how my grandmother had 11 children, 34 grandchildren. 19 of my first cousins died of HIV-related diseases,
wow. Yeah,
including my youngest brother. I'll talk about having 49 orphaned kids on my side of the family alone, another 40 on my ex-husband's side. I could see people's eyes glazing over like I was telling a fiction story, like it wasn't true. And now we're seeing this all over the world. We have been united in a very...
That's interesting.
Very interesting way, yeah.
I think you're right. It's very interesting because you're right. I think in America and in the UK and other parts of the world, it was, oh, this is something that's happening to gay men. And I don't really know any gay men. So it's happening.
You can't relate to it.
And then it was happening in Africa. So it was happening to Africa and gay men.
Yes.
But they weren't personally connected.
Yeah.
And I still think it blows me away, this, to be honest with you. This absolutely blows me away. We've had so many people here, and so many in America. You know, there's a guy who's been a 55-year-old guy who's telling everybody the pandemic's made up, doesn't exist. And then the next thing you know, he's on a ventilator. Oh. And you just
the stupidity of it. It's
how can you say it doesn't exist? I mean, you know, I don't know what the death. What's the death toll now? It's over 500 million.
500 million. Yeah. And you don't believe it. What do you want to see?
Yeah, that is. I think that's the case. Number of cases. Let me just have a look at. We were one of our clients. Well, Johns Hopkins, I don't know if you've seen it. They did a fabulous job when this first came out. They created a tracking environment. So anytime if you go to Johns Hopkins, they are tracking all of the COVID cases around the world. I mean,
okay,
as much as you can, because it's not always reported, right?
Yeah.
They just done a phenomenal job with it. So you can look. I'm looking right now worldwide. Okay, so we're tracking. I mean, this thing is not gone, right? April 30th, 14,000 people lost their lives on that day, you know, to COVID. So it's still, this thing is still very much out there.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I could talk to you all day, Joe. You are like a sister from another mother. I am so happy I got connected with you through this interview.
I'm going to have to come to Wellington now and take you out for a glass of wine.
Okay. Definitely. Consider that already done. I just want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. You know, the Her Story platform is a platform that uplifts, inspires, educates women worldwide. And it's through the sharing of these stories that we can make a difference. I think Jo has presented all of us with an amazing opportunity to have a career change. You could be that mom who's lost her job and you're sitting at home. Now you have a place to go. Jo, just give us the name of your website.
So, yeah, I mean, we are stemconnector.com.
Excellent. And I will put this with a transcript and with a magazine article that we're going to publish so that all of you ladies, you might know somebody who is looking for work, who's looking to pivot and find a different direction to take. Take advantage of the internet. The world is flat right now, ladies. You have no excuse to say that you can't feed your children, you can't find a job. Create something of your own. The world is flat and we have the mentors who can help us get there. Thank you for putting this app together, Jo. I'm excited to where you and I are going to go.
Yeah.
We will have that wine in Wellington when you come.
We will.
Have a fantastic day, everybody. Jo, don't go away. I will be back with you tomorrow when we come back with another amazing guest. This is Gertrude Mache on the Her Story TV and the Her Story podcast. Have a great day wherever you are in the world. Bye for now.
If you like this podcast and would like to understand a little bit more about what was discussed, then you are in luck. Simply head over to the herstorycircle.com where we have a fantastic bonus gift waiting for you to download. All we ask is that you leave a raving review. And lastly, help us share this podcast with your friends, your family, and your colleagues through Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and all your social media platforms. We really appreciate your support and look forward to seeing you again in our next episode. Thank you for listening to this podcast episode of the Her Story Circle. Once again, to get access to all the replays and future episodes, visit theherstorycircle.com and subscribe today.